And thanks for listening to RT Radio 1's The Rolling Wave podcast with me, Aoife Nic Cormack. In this episode, I'll be talking to instrument maker Frank Tate.
I got into instrument making. I found an advert in the back of Irish Music magazine in the Dublin Resource Centre on Marlborough Street, and it was for a course in making stringed musical instruments in Annie's Land College in Glasgow, and I'd been interested in learning, but that was the first course I ever saw advertised. Well, I was particularly interested in the mandolin and the bouzouki and all that kind of family of instruments. But when I got to the course, the people teaching it had never seen them before. And luckily I shared a house in Glasgow with Finbar Nocton, who had a mandolin, handmade Joe Foley mandolin, so I was able to bring that in and show them what a mandolin was. Actually, after Glasgow, I went to London for 2 years, so there's a further 2 years study. So Glasgow was kind of like a feeder course to a degree in the Guildhall in London, and so those 2 years there. So I made three or four instruments when I was there as well, mandolins and bouzoukis. I actually done the early strings, which was all baroque instruments, because I didn't want to particularly learn guitar making, even though I do a lot of guitars now, but I wanted to learn all the skills from early strings, was basically stuff like viol da gambas and treble viols and lutes. So all them old techniques of how bending wood and working it in a different way than guitar making. I suppose I kind of learnt a few techniques that I still use, particularly in the construction of my mandolins and bouzoukis, about bending separate pieces of wood and forming them on the top, which is the way old violins used to be made, as opposed to carved wood. I still do that on some mandolins. And of course my baroque scroll has been influenced by them old treble viols, you know.
Talk me through the basic process of making an instrument from start.
Yeah, well, I suppose one thing I did learn from making the baroque instruments is you just basically start with a lump of wood, and then you slice the wood into the different parts that you need. You can buy wood that's been somewhat thicknessed already, but I like to start with the raw material. And it's a question of, yeah, cutting the wood, joining it and thicknessing it.
What does thicknessing mean?
Thickness, just bringing it down to the correct dimensions, you know, generally, you know, between 3.5 to 2.5 millimetres, you know, for tops and backs, and down to 2 millimetres for the sides. So you have them all uniformly thicknessed before you start adding any internal components like bracing and internal blocks. You're basically building a box, you know, so you're making a top, a back and a sides.
Where do you get the wood?
I get it from some suppliers, some from Spain, some from America, some from England, some from up in Belfast. And then, yeah, there's a kind of lot of salvaged wood I've been using the last while. I've got a lot of mahogany now. Somebody just left me in that beautiful pink piece, but there's actually really nice mahogany underneath that. So, yeah, I'll plane that up and use that for neck wood. That big table there came from Trinity. Somebody dropped that in. That's from the science lab. That's really nice old mahogany. And then a whole big stack of this stuff from the shipyard in Belfast, this Brazilian mahogany. It's 100 years old. So actually, I just bought a whole load of church pews in Dundee last month, you know, and have them all stacked up in my bedroom. Thank you.
And when somebody comes into you and they want an instrument made, do people often have their own kind of preferences for the way they play, instruments that fit in better or the sound they want or that kind of thing? Do they go through all that with you?
Yeah, sometimes, you know, it actually makes it easier when somebody has a very firm idea of what they want. The more information they can give you, it's the easier it is to meet them kind of halfway. You know, for example, I just finished the commission. The blue mandolin, guy Simon Mailer came in and he had, you know, basically A4 sheets in a folder just full of every specification he wanted on the instrument. And then he told me, and I wanted stained blue at the end. So that was probably the most specific commission I'd got. And it turned out really well.
But apart from the blue, what kind of things do people want? Like what makes an instrument suit somebody better?
I suppose like a customised neck profile, you know, that fits their hand, the type of frets, you know, how it feels under the fingers is a big thing. That's the playability side of it. Then the sound wise is the other hugely important thing. Yeah, some people want more volume or treble or bass or attack or sustain, you know, just all these different acoustical considerations.
For the different styles of music as well, yeah. I suppose. Yeah,
well, yeah, and their particular style of playing. Yeah.
And how much of it is physics and how much of it is instinct or feel?
I think I've just moved really in the instincts about it all, you know. You know, I mean, once you get past all, there are certain thicknesses and tolerances everything has to be, but then once you get it in your hands, you have to work the wood so it's going to do what you want it to do. Yeah.
And at what point in the making do you know it's going well, or that it's working for you, or it's suiting the person you're making it for?
Yeah, usually when it gets to the stage when the box is just made without any inlay or trimmings on it. Just once you get it boxed up, as it's called, once you get that top and the back glued to the sides, that's kind of like that's the engine of the thing made. Everything after that is kind of aesthetics and playability, you know. So the box is what's really going to be generating the sound. So at that stage, I like to sit back and look at them, as you may see. I've got several here just at that stage. I work quite quickly to get them to that stage, and then I like to let them sit and think about what's going to happen next.
The bouzoukis that you make then, they're the flatback bouzoukis. So tell me about the ones you make and the difference between, say, the roundback ones that people would know.
Yeah, I suppose the roundback, the Greek ones, are with the template for the original bouzoukis, yeah. The Irish bouzoukis, characterised by the flat back and flat top or arch top. The round back ones have a more of a kind of distant reverbery sound, and it's kind of maybe more lended to treble playing, and like, you know, I suppose Alec Finn really invented that style, and that's the gorgeous style that attracted a lot of people to the bouzouki.
The mandolins then, do you make many mandolins? Are there many people playing mandolins in traditional music?
Yeah, they're starting, I mean, it was popular when I started making them and then it kind of faded away. I think they're coming back a bit now. The mandolins in Irish music are, they're always there somewhere. You know, a lot of banjo players have got a mandolin somewhere, but it's. I think some people just see it as something you graduate from onto the banjo, which hopefully that's going to change.
You know, like with a fiddle, for example, a fiddle gets better with age, gets better when it's played. The same, I presume, with the instruments, the new instruments you're making. Like, would you be surprised sometimes when somebody comes back maybe 5 or 10 years later with an instrument to be repaired or something? Would they have changed a lot in the meantime?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, they do. It's amazing. They completely change. Even a couple of weeks in, you know, you can hear the difference after somebody's been playing it. I've actually one in my kitchen at the moment that I finished just before the lockdown, and a friend of mine's been playing it, and just from him playing it in the kitchen, you can hear the difference, like, you know. And it's amazing. I think they kind of tune into the people that are playing them and the style of music as well, you know.
have you made? How many instruments?
I don't know. I think it's about 160 now. I counted up about 150 last year, and I've probably made 10. Yeah, since then.
And I know that the instruments you've made have gone all over the place. And I know Paul Simon has one, for example, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. That came about through Aitken Promotions, who wanted to give Paul Simon a gift of an instrument. So,
and do you get feedback on things like that?
Yeah, well, he sent me. There's a set list there behind. That arrived by courier the night after the gig, and Paul Simon wrote, "Thank you for your beautifully made guitar."
I'd say you knew that quote off by heart. You didn't need to look back.
No, well, that one was interesting because I made him this kind of parlor guitar because I tuned it in this Nashville tuning, which is when you use the octave strings. On a 12-string guitar, you just keep the high strings. Because I'd read in this obscure interview that he'd written a lot of the Simon Garfunkel hits on this tuning. So that's what I tuned it up as and I constructed it for. So.
And say somebody like Donal Lunny as well, who would have been one of the pioneers of the bouzouki, say, in traditional music. When they come in, and I know he's been in here and you've worked with him making instruments, is it interesting to come like with your new skills and his sort of his knowledge of the instrument and put them together?
Oh yeah, no, when Donald came in, he was very specific about what he wanted. I suppose he's a total innovator. He wanted a baritone bouzouki, you know, a tuned or a mandocello, some people call them, and it was a very distinctive body shape, and he was pretty clear about what kind of sound he wanted. So that was challenging, but it worked out very well. Yeah, it's great to get a commission from somebody like that, just who knows so much about the instrument and has dozens of bouzoukis and has thought about what he wants. And yeah, he's got a very subtle way of putting ideas into your head about it and challenging your skills and improving your skills as a consequence.
Who comes in with a different thing that they want or a different way they want the instrument to work, that pushes you along, I suppose,
totally.
As well all the time, yeah.
No, that's what it's all about, increasingly so. I'm really noticing that. I've got a few customers who have commissioned a few instruments off me now, and some of them have been challenging. Like, I've learned how to do some construction techniques, you know, that I wouldn't have learned unless these people had suggested these innovations. And these are working musicians, you know, people who have thought about it and are going to benefit from these innovations. And it's, yeah, and I'm having to raise my game to facilitate better playing experience for them.
Thanks for listening to the Rolling Wave podcast. For rights reasons, the music here is shorter than in the original broadcast. So if you'd like to hear the full version, just go to rte.ie/radio1. And this programme was first broadcast on the 21st of June 2020. Till the next time, Gura Míle Maithagaí, agus slán.